final hour.
Final hour. This is it.
This is it. You're going to have to do something big.
This is it. Oh, Jacob, come on,
I don't know what
man.
That big thing is.
Get
Jacob.
Something for us, Jacob.
Jacob, please, help
Let's
us.
Go.
It's been small up until now.
Yeah, we're all right.
All right. Okay, Drats, Drays, I'm Mike. We are the JV team, as Drays has said, for the Tom and Curly Show. John will be back next week. Tom, the week after. But that is not going to stop us. That will not silence us. Well, it'll silence us on Monday, but it won't silence us today. Off the bat, we have a guy you don't think of when you look at media people and you look at controversy.
Mm-hmm.
The first idea that comes to mind is not meteorologist. Yet, in this particular case, it did. It's Cliff Mass. Cliff Mass, and when I was pitching in over at KNKX a few years ago, I used to have to take Cliff's weather report, turn it into to an online thing, much in the same way My Northwest does here. And so I had to go through a lot of Cliff Mass weather reports, which were great. He's got a really spectacular radio voice.
Okay.
He is a well-regarded meteorologist, although he has sort of run outside what many meteorologists would say outside the playing field for a lot of his own commentary on global warming or on climate change issues. Okay. Like that, sometimes not running with what conventional science says and running with other
ideas. And
that's
okay, right?
That's entirely okay, and I think that's what KNKX has argued for a long time. Well, he finally did it. He finally stepped outside of what KNKX would find acceptable. Cliff is a University of Washington professor. His job is not in any way threatened in this regard. He is a tenured professor, but KNKX announced that it is axing. This is from the Seattle Times. Its long-running weather segment with meteorologist Cliff Mass after the University of Washington professor wrote a post on his own blog comparing the Seattle protesters to the early Nazi Germany militia known as the Brown Shirts. He wrote that, quote, Seattle had its Kristallnacht, which was the name for the night when a lot of the Brown Shirts, who were the Nazi youth, Nazi sympathizers, went out and destroyed the stores of Jewish merchants and some homes as well, and actually physically attacked some people. It is considered the precursor to what ultimately became the rounding up of the Jews and then leading to the Holocaust. The Kristallnacht was in 1938. And then Cliff Mass compares the protesters in Seattle breaking windows in, Starbucks windows, breaking windows in Capitol Hill, breaking windows in downtown and in other places to that. This is so Cliff today went on the Dory Monson show, and this is what he had to say.
I went around Seattle, and I was just stunned by how boarded up it was. It was startling. And in fact, it was more than just boarded up. Some of the stores and businesses looked like they had gigantic fortresses in front of them. It was amazing. And there was no one there. It was just so depressing. So I rotated from this terrible damage to the city and this boarding up of the city and what caused it. And clearly that was due to the violence, that we had a group of thugs that were running around the city, breaking windows, looting stores, hurting policemen and others. And so, I moved on to that. Why did this happen? And so for me, a very important analog is what happened in the 1930s, where you had thugs that were destroying Jewish businesses, marking up Jewish businesses, hassling people, intimidating people. And the general population said nothing, or they said very little. They were afraid. And so for me, there's a real analog to what's happening today, that people are afraid to speak out about what's going on.
Then he talked about the call he got today from KNKX.
They called me, and there was no give and take. It's basically I'm done, and that was the end of it. There was no discussion or anything. There's no offer, So I took the blog off or something like that. It was off. And I've talked to people internally in the radio station. They just basically panicked with it. It was an intense mob on social media that was criticizing them, and they made the decision almost instantly.
So,
wow,
what do you think?
Wow, I have a lot of thoughts going through my head. First and foremost, let me say KNKX, I'm not with that at all. I'm not with them letting him go. He did something on his personal blog. There's a strong part of me that is always for people speaking out, people speaking their perspectives. You know, I understand it, but to me, we can't keep living. I'm not for the whole politically correct culture where you can't say what you want, can't say what you think. I just think ultimately that's going to leave us all, as he's saying, in a position where you can't speak the truth and you're afraid. However, now to him, right, very differently, to Cliff Mass, I have a completely different message, right? I actually don't agree with a lot of what he's saying, right? How he's, the connections that he's making, first off, he's saying things like people, these people are harming police, right? These are the words out of his own mouth. They're running around, they're harming police. That's not true. So you're making a correlation of something happening in Seattle, but it doesn't line up what was happening in Germany.
It doesn't at all. It doesn't in any way line up.
In any way, right. And so,
if you actually understand history, right?
Right. So I don't agree with his points. I don't think he should have been let go. Those are two different things, right? To his points, I would sit and argue with him day and night. In addition, I would say what's happening in Seattle, which is the issue that I have with Cliff, is where's your discussion and your conversation about what's happening in black and brown communities? Where's the part about us being harassed? Where's the parts about us being killed and us being living a life in of terror at the hands of police, right? And so the fact that he's silent to the other side, right, without, I understand if you want to give voice to the fact that we need police. I actually agree with you.
Yeah.
I have no problem with that. But I challenge a lot of his correlations and the way he lines things up. They don't line up at all.
They don't line up at all. Yeah. I mean, and that was the thing that it's just such a, you're a university professor. And I think that sometimes when you're a tenured university professor, you just start maybe the, like, it's like when you become a U.S. senator.
Yeah.
Every joke you tell is funny. Everything you think is important, even when it isn't. And I think in this particular case, this was someone who was drawing a comparison. And it's not even a particularly, it's not only not a strong comparison, it's literally not a comparison at all.
At all.
There is, I mean, other than the fact that I would agree, plywood was used to protect windows from being broken, and windows were broken, and businesses were damaged.
Right.
That's it. That's as far as it goes.
That's
so
it.
If you want to compare it to a hurricane, you can do that too.
Right.
You know,
right.
And that's just as accurate. But as far as like motivations and the historical underpinning of what was going on, and who the victims are and who the victims are not,
right?
He blew it. He made a spectacularly stupid comment. But as far as him getting rid of well,
can I say something too?
Yeah.
As he continued to go back to Germany and talk about random thugs and things of that nature, I don't like that, right? Because to me, again, you're making a parallel to the protesters, right? And we know that these protests tie directly to African American communities.
Right.
And when you're talking about buildings being broken into, now it just the verbiage that he's using ties to us being thugs.
Well,
ties to us being
the brown shirts were part of the government structure.
Right. And then
part of the party structure.
Right. And then you have a couple of loose cannon idiots at these protests.
Right.
We have constantly, the protests are peaceful by and large,
right,
which is a completely, you're lining up peaceful protests to someone breaking into buildings.
Right.
And it really is frustrating.
I mean, the Kristallnacht, the intent.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
Was to threaten and damage the businesses owned by the Jewish population,
right,
and intimidate the Jewish population. The intent on these protests was nothing of the same.
Nothing.
Now, do you have people acting out in similar Yes, absolutely. But to even compare them shows a dismal. I mean, I'm assuming, having gone through his weather reports,
that he's
better with the weather than he is with history.
So that's where it starts to scream that you don't get it, or that you have some sort of a secondary motive, because as you said wonderfully, the intent is, you can look at the intent of all of the people protesting by the amount of time they've been protesting. I promise you, if the protesters wanted to tear this city up, it'd be torn up. Right? Like, we've been in the streets day and night over and over for a long time. It's not about tearing the city up.
True story. I get a call from a relative in California when they saw one of my relatives who watches 98, 99% of the time Fox News, and asks about the fact that Capitol Hill seems to be entirely on fire. And I said, like, so, and then I did the little Google map drawing, and I said, this is the section where the bad stuff is happening, or good stuff, depending on your perspective. But I understand where the tension is and where things are volatile. And I did like this. It was like a 3-block area. And I said, and then there's the rest of town. And I said, this is what it looks like outside my window. Like, you have to actually work a little bit at understanding the context of what's happening and the size and scope of what's happening. And again, any comparison to Nazi Germany seems to me false. But as far as letting him go, I don't disagree with you. I mean, but if you're a radio station that deals with a particular, it could be the smartest thing that they've, one of the smarter things that they've done.
Okay.
If you're a radio station that deals with, that you're an NPR station, the NPR affiliate station, and you know largely the demographics of your listeners.
Yeah.
And you know largely these are the people, and you're depending on their donations all the time, and you get a social media kerfluffle, you can take the hard stance and say, hey, look, folks, we disagree with what he wrote. Here's our response to that, but we're going to keep him around. Or you can say, well, there's another meteorologist out there.
Well, there's the right thing to do, and then there's the financially profitable thing to do. And so, to me, the right thing to do...
Or the financially expedient thing to do, at least.
Right. To me, I you know, and I'm saying this without knowing the numbers, without knowing all the details, I say the right thing to do is to basically distance yourself from the comments.
Right.
That's it, right? Just let them know he has an opinion. He's over on his own blog doing that, right? And then you just continue to monitor situations and make sure nothing hateful comes out or nothing. When you get to a point where there does come up a tipping point, I just don't think that it's there.
So what if he had criticized, what if he had gone out and criticized and said explicitly, not implicitly, that he compared the Black Lives Matter movement to the brown shirts and using the same approach?
He's out.
He's fired.
Yeah. It's because you didn't, right? At the end of the day, there has to be something said to when you do something and when you don't.
Right.
Right? He hasn't done that. Right. And I'm okay with that. So he
walked into that territory, but he didn't cross the line.
And let me be clear, I fundamentally disagree with everything he said.
I get you. Yeah.
Right?
I
want to make it clear, but I want to also say we can't continue to be a society that's not decent. There is a point where you can get to mob mentality where everything is agree with us 100% or we throw stones. There are several people he's Jewish. There are several people who are white, several people who are not African-American who once stood on the other side of a lot of these views around the concept of Black Lives Mattering, right? Literally 6 months ago. So there are some people. So what does that say? Had we thrown them away 6 months ago, they'd have never had the opportunity to join us.
That's true.
So there are people who are marching with us today. It's going to take time.
Who never would have.
That's
entirely
true.
And
now they are. And I believe that Cliff Mass could one day walk with us, right? If he could get, I don't know what it's going to take for him in particular. But I'm saying we have to continue to be the type of people that open up, keep the door open for people to come into the movement. And if every time something happens, you throw someone away, we're not going to get anywhere. Now, there are lines.
Right.
There are lines. And what you said, if he was to compare the brown shirts to Black Lives Matter, that's the line. I'm sorry. And I want to say this last thing because I said it, but I have to say it again. I'm really disappointed in the fact that he does not understand what the protests are about. That is painful.
He clearly doesn't understand.
And it screams that you don't care. These are not games. These are my uncles and brothers and sisters and people I know dying in the streets. I live in Seattle. I watched a whole generation of men that I know be dragged off to jail behind systemic racism, right? Behind laws around drugs that were unequal. So it's not like, well, they were thugs. No, there were thugs in Bellevue moving cocaine, right? Yeah. These guys just had rock. Right. And I'm just keeping it 100. Right. So to me, when you don't get that, it's frustrating. It's painful. And when you're a meteorologist and you're working at the University of Washington, I expect more from you. I demand more from you. So I'll call you out.
Right.
I'm the person who's going to look and go, no, you got to do better. Like, this is not okay. If you want to highlight the fact that we shouldn't be, this small sect shouldn't be breaking in buildings, and you're pained by walking through Seattle and seeing boarded buildings, so am I. And I believe Black Lives Matter.
Right.
We're not.
Those are not independent thoughts.
Right. They're not. Right. Black Lives Matter. And I'm for every small business in Seattle. All of them. I want us to win our economy, our people. That's the spirit of our movement. And when people try to hijack it and when they try to grab the steering wheel and take the movement to somewhere else and make us out to be, as he said, you're using the word thugs in Germany. So right. Then who are these protesters? Because you made the parallel. So now you're saying that these protesters are thugs? No, we're not thugs. We're humans that want rights, that want to be loved. We want to be valued, right? Our right. lives have been made to feel like they're not valuable, and they are equally valuable to the Jewish lives. So what you really need to be doing is looking at these African-Americans and these people of African descent and going, I feel your pain.
Right.
How can I come to your aid?
You should be on the natural. I mean, if you know enough about, and he purports to, I suspect maybe now he doesn't, but he purports to know enough about the way the Jews were treated in Nazi Germany, one would assume that that would make you incredibly sympathetic to other people who were under a thumb somewhere and violently abused under a thumb somewhere, yet...
He's going with the power structure.
Yet this is what he says.
Yeah.
Because now, suddenly, you know, he only sees... broken wind. He only sees like the physical product of it, right?
Yeah.
And he doesn't see the humanity behind it, and he doesn't see the needs behind it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I'm sorry. That was my little rant.
No, that was not a little rant. That was actually an exceptional rant.
I'm not.
And it's true.
I'm not Jason. I'm Drazy Rant. Let's go. I just had to throw that out there. So.
All right. So. Coming up in the next segment, or don't forget to text 98973 because we've got your letters at the end of the show. We will be talking about, it looks like, the density, maybe of the people, but the density of our population is actually not the problem, science is now saying. It's the way we behave inside that density. Coming up.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are landing the plane almost officially.
Not yet landed. We still have our chance to crash it.
It's coming. We still have a shot. What a great co-pilot you have been. This is awesome. It's the Tom and Curly Show. And if you haven't noticed, I'm Dre's. This is my guy, Mike, man. And we are having a lot of fun. So, Mike, I want to run something by you. When this whole thing started, coronavirus, right, and it was out in the atmosphere, what do you think would be one of the biggest contributors to people getting the disease, right? There's this stuff about density or going to the suburbs. Where did you think the growth would really be the biggest?
You know, I wasn't entirely certain because remember when we started, there was much less emphasis on masks and much more emphasis on washing your hands all the time.
Yes.
We ran out of hand sanitizer, and then all the distilleries started making this really highly alcoholic hand sanitizer.
Yeah.
And so I was less concerned about being around people and more concerned about, did those people wash their hands?
You know what's so funny? As you're saying this, it's like there's almost like different seasons of coronavirus, right? As we're talking it out,
right,
I'm like,
yeah,
you're right. Like,
as we learn more, right?
Yeah, what month where did you shift what you were thinking
right.
was, right? And then there comes this point where we start learning about it being airborne, right? Like that moment where we're all like, wow. And so there's this article is talking about the concept of cities like New York, right? Dense cities, right? And it's being that dense cities and situations, the idea that that's going to make the virus grow out of hand is all speculative. Matter of fact, the Washington Post, it's Henry Olsen, he proclaimed early on, suburban lifestyle was going to be the nation's secret weapon against the virus, right? Because open areas, you know what I mean? And what this study is finding, that density doesn't make you get sick. It's crowd connectivity and coming together that actually does it.
Yeah, I mean, because what we saw was we and what they refer to as confirmation bias. Like, we think one thing is true, so we just look at evidence that confirms that. And that's the human condition. We all do that. But in this particular case, we saw this massive spike in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And New York, of course, is New York City. And New York City is 11, well, I don't know, 8 million people or so, maybe upwards of that if you count the close-in suburbs. It seems very crowded. They're having these crazy spikes.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of people dying, things like that. And so we just say, well, of course, if you just get away from people, or you just get away from New York mm-hmm. and the density of population there, because Manhattan at noon on a business day, not now, but at noon was one of the most densely populated places on planet Earth.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really, and so that has to be the cause. But it turns out that actually it's what you do in that. Like, you can be in a densely populated area, according to this story, but you can still maintain your distance from people,
yep.
not be like 10 in an elevator, in a small elevator, not walk, not hang out in crowds on the street. All of that stuff, like, if you could still maintain, and I would imagine, and you've had this experience too, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're walking down the street and you see a crowd of people coming
yep.
towards you, and now you're sort of doing that thing where you cut out into the street. Like, everyone's doing this sort of yeah. weird thing. I imagine in New York that's much more difficult, right? Because there's just so many more people. But nonetheless, the spread appeared to be more linked to what you're doing in the crowd and whether or not you're wearing a mask. I mean, the Florida situation, for example.
Yeah. This is important to me because we're talking about connectivity.
Right.
We're talking about people being responsible.
Right.
We're talking about the fact that this could be looked at negatively, right? Because if you live in a suburb, you're going, oh, snap, right?
Right.
Like, I wanted to know that I was safer. But at the end of the day, we're putting the power back in your own hands. So the
right.
knowledge is that you have the power in your own hands. Watch who you're connecting with. I wanted to ask you something that is, it just makes me think, right? Just kind of an obvious.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think that maybe the rise in numbers in places like Seattle, right,
right.
had something to do with the marches?
Well, so they're not finding. I mean, this is most of the science right now that has looked into marches and the spread of the virus. They have not found anything. But I would say that there have been a lot of marches. And the ones that I've attended as a reporter for Cairo
yeah.
generally had a decent mask rate. Now, some of that was that some of the, you know, I don't know if all these folks are Antifa or whatnot, but mask was part of the style prior to the pandemic.
Okay,
and so
right, yeah.
and so suddenly you couldn't like tell who was who anymore. But I would say that most of the science, at least in other places where they've really done those studies, are not finding that the protests had any measurable effect. But what did have a measurable effect was people going out, hanging out close together, maybe doing some drinking. And they tend to disproportionately now blame young people because young people have this sort of thing about wanting to go out no matter how bad it is. They still want to be able to get with their friends and they still want to be able to get and have a little party because there's just nothing else because all the places they would go to are all closed.
I think it's also if I can just go candidly, pulling back from the story for
yeah.
a minute and asking myself, like, yeah, I have this moment where I'm going, how is this thing spreading? Right? Because
yeah.
I feel like I'm doing a decent job. I mean,
right.
when I of obeying the rules, everywhere I go, people seem to be doing a fairly good job. So I naturally, like you're saying, blame the young people, right?
Yeah.
I gotta believe they're
that's
the
our
ones
as older people.
Yeah.
It's our obligation.
Yeah, it's the right.
That's
thing
part
to
of
do.
The owner's yeah. manual. We yeah. need to blame the prior a prior generation. I'm old enough to have multiple prior generations.
Yeah,
you know, so it's their fault.
Let me ask you though. Okay, real question. What are we doing wrong? What's our generation doing wrong? What do we have to do to not be falling into this connectivity, right? Where are we connecting with other people where we're spreading this thing one to another by and large?
You know, that's a good question because I think that generally speaking, I've done the thing where I got all the way to the supermarket on my vehicle, turned around, went back home, got the mask, went back.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say the first month in when masks started getting more popular but not mandatory,
yeah.
I would just like hustle fast, you know,
yeah.
through the store,
okay.
not get a mask. But
okay.
Now I'm pretty good about it. Now I'll 100% of the time, but I also have literally a mask in every pair of pants, like a mask in every jacket. I have like got 30 of them. I put them everywhere. So I would say that to that extent I'm good about it. Still washing my hands a lot. But I also operate, and we're doing everything we can, I also operate a bar.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
yeah.
if I really wanted to, financial considerations aside, if I really wanted to make my own statement, I shut the whole thing down, right?
Mm.
And, you know, and I don't allow anyone in there, and I decide that this is not going to be a vector. Now, I'm hopeful that the guidelines that have been propagated are guidelines that work, and
yeah.
the guidelines that keep it. I know that we're going crazy with the constant wipe down of stuff. Everyone's
okay.
in a mask, and
okay.
We're going above and beyond. We literally managed to get a hold of some like medical hospital grade antiviral spray. I mean, stuff that you literally is used in hospital rooms to wipe down tables, wipe down surfaces,
yep.
all that like multiple times a day. So, but still,
Yeah.
That's reducing risk. That is not eliminating risk.
Yeah. Yeah. The funny part is I can't find, I'm not perfect, but I don't know what I'm doing wrong, right? In my head, I'm going, I think I'm doing a fairly decent job.
But
here,
how
right?
many times have you said that in your life, broadly speaking, yeah. and then found out yeah. that you were doing something
you
wrong?
You know what? I do know that the mask forgetting is like chronic. Like,
oh, yeah.
I'm in the car. I leave it in the car now, right? And I'm yeah. like, leave it in the car. I have a place for it. And every time you get out, take it with you when you come back. And then when I go in the house, I'm like, hey, man, there's no mask coming with me into the right. crib, right? So I drop it in the little spot. And
do you ever tug your shirt up over your nose? Have you had to do that one yet?
I have. When you forget it somewhere, you're like, dude, I'm not running all the way back to get the mask. I'm just running here to get a little water or something. I don't know. We're going to throw this over my nose and just kind of – I think I've seen people do it into my head. I think it doesn't work. I'm like walking like, that's not working.
So what are we going to do come winter? What are we going to do come winter when we can't sit outside at a distance? And what are we going to do when we are actually in closed quarters? I mean, especially now if you're winter in Arizona, there's no real season change, so whatever. But winter in Seattle is a different sort of thing.
You want to know what I'm going to do?
What are you going to do?
I'm going to be in L.A.
that's what you're going to do.
That's what I'm going to do. However, winter in Seattle, it's going to be tough. I think that there can be a case made that winter, we may not have seen the worst of it, right? Like, like a bunch of stuff that we actually are able to do right now will be taken from us. Like, there are, at your bar, I would assume that people can sit outside.
There's a little bit of outside seating. Yeah, we're in a weird configuration. But yeah, I mean, to the extent possible, people do, and they cling to it. And all over town, you're seeing tables out on sidewalks. You're seeing people embrace this idea. You're seeing people sitting out on their decks and not going out. I've done the same at my house.
And it's August.
Right. I keep thinking about, like, everyone's house is going to get so much smaller.
Well, listen.
Very soon.
In my best Game of Thrones voice, winter is coming. Okay? And when it comes, what are you going to do at the bar? Have you guys even thought about that? Like, how does that change things?
Survive.
When the rain comes.
I mean, all we're really doing, I mean, it's
fire pits.
Fire pits, more awnings.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what you do at that point because it's not going to be easy. I mean, all of us, I think, in the restaurant industry, we're just trying to, like, survive to the point where it starts to come back, because it's just, I feel like it's not gotten at its worst point yet.
Yeah.
And we're probably heading there.
I just want to say to everybody, please have fun, man, because winter's coming, man. And I'm not saying it to be negative. I'm saying, like, figure out how you're going to get through it.
No one who's planning on flying to Los Angeles would say anything negative about how Seattle is going to deal with winter. I completely understand it. You're completely credible on that point.
All right,
coming up, we've got your letters. Hopefully you guys enjoyed the week as much as we did.
Yes. All right, we are officially landing the plane. Am I correct?
Yeah, we are officially landing. We are on approach,
as they say.
So, cross-check.
buckle your seatbelts.
Yeah, buckle your seatbelts. And I guess I know who's supposed to announce the landing.
It's my favorite song.
Is this your favorite song?
Yeah.
I'm the mailman. As you can see, I'm the mailman. Don't nobody mess with me. I'm the mailman. If you didn't know, I'm the mailman. I bring the mail to your door.
Ah, Lady A coming in from the 206 about Lady A says, how about Lady A Plus?
From area code 206, I lost respect for the Seattle Lady A when she asked for $10 million from the other Lady A, a bit much.
Area code 509, ante, before bellum, war antebellum, before war. And in the U.S., it often refers to before the U.S. Civil War.
Brad the painter. As a small-time musician myself, I think that the OG Lady A blew it. She should have taken the money and put it toward her career, then changed her name to The Lady A.
From the 206, Seattle's Lady A will probably have her name back shortly when Antebellum's fans leave because they are fed up with the extreme change, the name, work, PC, cancel, culture, fad du jour, or they could go with Lady Bella, beautiful lady.
On the Spokane Indians from area code 253, yes, if they are okay with it, white people stop thinking and assuming. Happy Friday.
From the 360, look at how much FSU contributes to the Seminole Nation.
From area code 253. Hey, guys, it's been an Army tradition to name every aircraft in their inventory after a Native American tribe. For instance, the Blackhawk, the Iroquois, the Apache, the Kiowa, and the Chinook. That's actually a good point. I didn't notice that, but yeah. I did now, yeah.
Yeah, interesting. From the 253, not one Native American friend or family member of mine has ever said they don't like the Redskins' name. Most of them seem to be fans of that team and take pride in it.
Social media posts from area code 425. So now you guys are stumping for Rump? Is he the replacement for Joe Biden? This is the reference to us taking a photo selfie together, and behind us was John Curley's proud Trump sticker.
From about open containers from 516 area code, Hamsterdam.
That was what the clip was about in From the Wire. I'm so happy we finally got that on a show. I've been wanting to do that for years. From area code 425. So you want alcohol in high school?
From the 253, alcoholism kills way more people every year than COVID. You are like the people saying nobody should have to wear a mask.
From area code 206, to be honest, Starbucks reusable cups make drinking in public easy. Made drinking in public easy years ago.
Okay. I got to try that one. From the 206, if people can learn that one can drink alcohol without getting drunk, then we'll be fine for public drinking.
America 253, when I was in the Marshall Islands, they had an alcohol permit. If you had the permit, you could drink anything, anywhere, anytime, and were able to be in the bars. If you abused alcohol, you lost the permit and wouldn't be allowed in bars. So essentially an alcohol consumer's license.
I like it. Alan Lightman from the 702, don't forget that Clinton won the popular vote versus Trump.
That is true. On Success Addicts, from America 206, a workaholic?
From the 206, the worst thing for any artist is to never be satisfied. If what drives you is corrupt and tainted, then eventually it will be your downfall. You will never be happy.
From America 386, money isn't the problem. Love of money is the problem.
Ooh, thank you, philosopher. Name Sean in Arlington. In the end, it's an addiction to the dopamine, regardless of how someone else interprets the exact cognition that causes it. Victory is success versus fulfillment. Conflation. It's already hard enough to make words mean anything in this world where words are perpetually failing us. When it comes to the precision, we need to speak with true risk-free clarity.
And now it's time for the letter of the day. From Alan in Seattle, I usually catch the show via podcast and imagine my surprise on Monday when both Tom and Curly were absent and two different voices appeared, like tuning in to watch The Simpsons, and instead as WWE Wrestling appeared. I didn't change the channel, though. I like both shows. You two are outstanding guest hosts, and I truly appreciate the perspectives on a myriad of topics discussed over the week. Mike, you've always been stellar. Dre's, what a breath of fresh air you are. As a fellow Seattleite who was born and raised living in South Seattle, it's quite refreshing to see our perspective on air. Love your take on the different topics. Love how you not only carry the show at times, but stop, pivot, and throw it back at Mike. You two are a great team. I hope you get into fill-in for Tom and John. Curly and Dre's, that would be a golden... I would pay to listen to that. Curly and Dre's would be a golden combo, in my opinion. Hats off to you two for hosting such a great week of shows. Thanks for an outstanding job. That was very nice of them. And Dre's, I would say the same thing. It was spectacular working with you, and what I said in the off-air was, at moments, I would have these waves of jealousy when you were saying something really smart and really like, I wish I had said that. But it's only because working with you has been a treat.
Man, likewise, this has been super dope, man. I hope at some point we get to do it again.
I do, too.
I'm sure we will. Seattle, man, God bless. Have a great weekend.
And make sure you say hello to John when he's back on Monday.
Peace.
That's all she wrote.
That's all she wrote.
Didn't write no more.
Didn't write no more.
She left the gloom a-hanging round my front door.